The following Dharma talk was recorded in July 2014 in St. Louis, Missouri. It is one of three recordings from the retreat called Cultivating Insight with an Open Heart, taught by Phil Jones. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Philip Jones has practiced meditation since 1987 and has been teaching insight meditation since 1996. He has studied with teachers from Spirit Rock and the Insight Meditation Society and graduated from the first Community Dharma Leader Program in 2000. More info can be found at www.silentmindopenheart.org.
So this is a talk on relinquishing the unwholesome and cultivating the wholesome. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha is recorded as saying, doing no evil, engaging in what's skillful, and purifying one's mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. That word evil may jar some of us. I have a little bit of reactivity about it myself. So I looked in multiple translations to see if that was really accurate. And every single one of them said evil. That doesn't mean we can't translate it differently in our own minds, though. In the second line, there's that word skillful. And I don't know about you, but for a long time in my practice, it was another one of those Buddhist words that really didn't mean a lot to me. But you know, it turns out it's referring to half of our practice. Cultivating what is skillful, what is wholesome. Wholesome is actually a translation I've come to prefer more lately, just because I think it really points more to the depth of the goodness that's involved in this. And then in the third line, we have this word purifying. It's another one of those words that I didn't really like too much for a long time in the practice. But it really is part of what we're doing. For instance, each time we make a decision to act out of generosity or non-harming, each time we sit down to meditate and recognize when greed, hatred, or delusion arises without getting entangled in it, or recognize when generosity, goodwill, or wisdom arises and do what we can to support it, we're engaged in the process of purification. So here's my rendition of those lines. Doing nothing unwholesome, engaging in what is wholesome, and purifying one's mind. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. In the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses, the Buddha tells us, whatever one frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of one's mind. Whatever one thinks upon and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of one's mind. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, the teaching on the four fields for establishing mindfulness, the Buddha tells us, understand a mind with lust as a mind with lust, and a mind without lust as a mind without lust. We should understand a mind with hatred as a mind with hatred, and a mind without hatred as a mind without hatred. We should understand a mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, and a mind without delusion as a mind without delusion. So we're supposed to know when the mind is caught in greed, hatred, or delusion, and to know that that's unwholesome, and know when the mind is free from greed, hatred, and delusion, and know and appreciate that at that time our mind is wholesome. There's at least two reasons for doing this. The first is basic and is captured in these lines from the Dhammapada. Not seeing what you long for is suffering. So is seeing what you dislike. In other words, getting caught in greed and hatred and the delusion that underlie both of them hurts, maybe physically, certainly emotionally. It agitates our hearts and our minds. The second reason is expressed in the lines I quoted earlier. Whatever one thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of one's mind. If we spend our time caught in thoughts of greed, hatred, and delusion, we're sowing seeds for more greed, hatred, and delusion to arise. If we spend our time cultivating thoughts of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, we're sowing seeds for more generosity, goodwill, wisdom, and happiness to arise. We're cultivating a more wholesome, more peaceful life. We all know this to some extent, but I think for most, if not all of us, the question is, how do we do it? Fortunately, the Buddha shared some of his own experiences in sorting this out. Once again, in the middle-length discourses, we find the Buddha reflecting, before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, it occurred to me, suppose that I divide my thoughts into two classes. Then I set on one side thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty. And I said on the other side, thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of non-ill will, and thoughts of non-cruelty. In a way, this is the practice that the Buddha talked about in the Satipatthana Sutta. Knowing what our mind state is at a particular time. It's also an expression of right effort, which can be summarized as, don't give rise to what is unwholesome. But if the unwholesome comes into your mind, heart, or actions, abandon it. Give rise to what is wholesome. If the wholesome is already present, support and increase it. The Buddha offers one of his wonderful similes to illustrate the kind of diligence we need to bring the mind, to bring mindfulness to unwholesomeness. When the crops in the fields thicken, a cowherd would recognize it was a dangerous time for him and his cows. So he would guard his cows by constantly tapping and poking them on this side and that with a stick to keep them from getting into the fields and eating all the crops. So, too, I saw in unwholesome states danger, degradation, and defilement. So seeing and knowing for ourselves that unwholesome states are truly unwholesome, we're more likely to be very vigilant, making sure that they don't arise. Or if they do arise because of previous conditioning, we're more likely to tap and poke at them rather than letting them graze as they please in the fields of our hearts and minds. Being vigilant in this way can be spoken of as bringing careful attention and mindfulness to our minds and hearts. And that careful attention and mindfulness allows us then to work in a skillful way with whatever unwholesome states arise. So I mentioned last night that I was going to talk about this. Here it comes. In another sutta called The Removal of Distracting Thoughts, Middle Length Discourses number 20, the Buddha tells us five ways to work skillfully with unwholesome thoughts. Five ways to tap and poke them. He said, if there arise in one evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion. So we recognize that they're already present in the mind. First, we should give attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome. When one gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, then any evil, unwholesome thoughts are abandoned in one and subside. So the word sign is a reference to whatever the characteristic is of the thought that allows us to perceive it. So in this case, the things that we would notice that would help us recognize that this particular thought is present and whether it's wholesome or not. The Buddha offers a simile to illustrate how this replacing an unwholesome thought with a wholesome one can work. Just as a skilled carpenter or his apprentice might knock out, remove, and extract a coarse peg by means of a fine one, so using a wholesome thought to replace an unwholesome one is like using a smaller peg to help knock out a bigger one. I think it's interesting that the first instruction that the Buddha gives us is if we find that there's an unwholesome thought in our minds, simply try to replace it with a wholesome one. It's very simple. It's very pragmatic. To me, the message is, don't make a big deal about it. These things arise because of previous conditioning. So just replace it with something that's wholesome and create some conditioning for future wholesome states to arise. An example of doing this is when we're practicing mindfulness of breathing. We have the intention to pay attention to the experience and be mindful of the experience of breathing. And then we notice that attention has drifted off to something else. something we want or something that we don't want. And our first instruction is, when you wake up to that, bring your attention back to the breath. This is what we're doing. We're replacing something unwholesome with something wholesome. Very simple. Sometimes, that's all that's needed. Sometimes, more is needed. And so the sutta continues. But if there still arise in one evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion, then one should examine the danger in those thoughts thus. These thoughts are unwholesome. They are reprehensible. They result in suffering. So this is pretty straightforward. If the unwholesome thought persists after you try to replace it with a wholesome one, give attention to the ways in which it leads to suffering, the ways it leads to affliction, to danger. Give attention to the ways that it's unsatisfactory. And the Buddha offers another simile. Our response to seeing that an unwholesome thought that we're getting entangled with would be similar to the response of a man or a woman, young, youthful, and fond of ornaments, who would be horrified, humiliated, and disgusted if a carcass, when I read this, I read rotting carcass, if a carcass of a snake or a dog or a human being were hung around his or her neck. When we clearly see that this is unwholesome, and we know the consequence of the unwholesomeness, we don't want to get involved with it. We don't want to hang around with it. We don't want it hanging around us. And so we abandon the unwholesome. Sometimes, though, things continue. So the Buddha said, if there still arise in one evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, with delusion, then one should try to forget those thoughts and should not give attention to them. The simile is, just as a man with good eyes who did not want to see forms that had come within range of his sight would either shut his eyes or look away. So if we've tried replacing the unwholesome with a wholesome thought, and it didn't stop the thought from re-arising, we've tried giving attention to the ways that it's unwholesome, and that didn't stop us from getting more entangled in it, then we should intentionally and purposely turn our attention away from the unwholesome thought, perhaps by refocusing on the breath, or doing metta meditation, or reflecting on our good deeds, or maybe going off and doing some walking meditation. Anything wholesome that's going to help us look away from the unwholesome thought. It's similar to the first instruction of simply replacing it. But this one is to be done with more determination, because the first one didn't work. Next, the Buddha says, but if there still arise in one evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion, then one should give attention to stilling the thought formation of those thoughts. And the simile is, Just as a man walking fast might consider, why am I walking fast? What if I walk slowly? And he would walk slowly. Then he might consider, why am I walking slowly? What if I stand? And he would stand. Then he might consider, why am I standing? What if I sit? And he would sit. Then he might consider, why am I sitting? What if I lie down? And he would lie down. By doing so, he would substitute for each grosser posture one that is subtler. So when I read this, it suggests to me that we engage in a step-by-step process of moving little by little from the unwholesome to what's more wholesome. Analeo Bhikkhu, who, as I mentioned earlier, has written what I think is probably the best contemporary commentary on the Satipatthana Sutta, suggests that since all the previous methods didn't work, then this next instruction suggests that we explore the motivational force that's causing this unwholesome thought to arise again and again. So my understanding of what he's suggesting is that we hold this unwholesome thought in a different way. We might patiently endure the thought with mindfulness and an attitude of investigation. Through mindfulness, we meet it without further grasping or aversion, so that we're not feeding more energy into it, which allows the motivational energy to drain away. And at the same time, holding the unwholesome thought with an attitude of investigation, so we're raising the question for ourselves, what's behind this thought? What is the energy that's keeping me caught in this? We raise the question, and then we hold it in the background of our minds in a spacious kind of way, allowing wisdom to arise as it will, so we can see more clearly what's actually going on here. And then the Buddha offers another instruction for us. But if even that fails to stop the unwholesome thought from arising, then, with one's teeth clenched and one's tongue pressed against the roof of one's mouth, one should beat down, constrain, and crush mind with mind. It's pretty explicit, but the Buddha does go ahead and offer a simile for this one, too. Just as a strong man might seize a weaker man by the head or shoulders and beat him down, constrain him, and crush him. So when all else fails, this is what we do. A lot of us are actually inclined to do this the very first thing when we recognize that an unwholesome thought is in our minds. But the Buddha is suggesting do this as a last resort. Analeo Bhikkhu describes it as kind of a way of putting the emergency brake on. You know, just a way of keeping us totally losing control as we're going down the hill, heading towards more and more unwholesomeness. And he says it's an emergency brake because this particular way of dealing with things will not lead to liberation. The other four ways of dealing with it can contribute to our liberation, but all this is going to do is just stop us from getting further and further into the unwholesome. So as we're working with these unwholesome thoughts, using these first four methods, we're using and strengthening the quality of wise or careful attention. Yoniso Manasikara is the Pali for it. And the quality of mindfulness. In another one of the collections of discourses, the Ittivutaka, the Buddha said, "In regard to internal factors, I do not perceive another single factor so helpful as wise attention for one who is a learner, who has not attained perfection, but lives aspiring for supreme security from bondage. One who wisely attends abandons what is unwholesome and develops what is wholesome." One of the ways that we're developing the wholesome through wise or careful attention is that wise attention is actually one of the conditions, kind of a precondition, for the arising of mindfulness. So the more we pay careful, wise attention to what's coming up in our minds, especially noticing whether it's unwholesome or wholesome, the more we're creating conditions for mindfulness to arise. And right mindfulness is the factor that leads to the other six factors of awakening, the factors I mentioned that balance out the five hindrances. Developing these seven factors is one of the key practices in the fourth field of mindfulness. In the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha tells us, "And how does one dwell contemplating phenomena in phenomena in terms of the seven enlightenment or awakening factors? When there is the mindfulness enlightenment factor, one understands, there is a mindfulness enlightenment factor in me. When there is no mindfulness in one, one understands, there is no mindfulness enlightenment factor within me. And one also understands how the unarisen mindfulness enlightenment factor arises, and how the arisen mindfulness enlightenment factor comes to fulfillment by development." The way that the awakening factor of mindfulness is fully developed is by fully developing our practice with the four fields for establishing mindfulness: body, the feeling tone of experience, our mind states, which I read about earlier in this talk, and these qualities of phenomena, especially the five hindrances and the seven factors of awakening. When right mindfulness begins to be developed, it's a condition for the arising of the factor of investigation, sometimes also called discrimination of phenomena, but the word that I really like is curiosity. Simply being curious. It allows us to recognize when we've been relating to our experiences in ways that lead to more difficulty, and when we've been relating in ways that lead to more happiness, more ease in our lives. When we're curious about what we've been encountering, there's a desire to see, to know, what is this what's true here? What's going on with this thought or emotion that keeps coming into awareness? When I think I've seen it, and I think I've let it go. With this quality of investigation, there's energy that arises. And so it just so happens investigation is the condition for the arising of the awakening factor of energy. The energy supports our efforts to look more closely with mindfulness and curiosity, to see if we can recognize things as they truly are. And out of this looking and seeing, out of the working together of these three factors, insights begin to arise. The experience of insight is actually a pleasant experience. Even when we see something that we wish weren't there, we wish it wasn't part of who we are right now, there's a kind of a joy in seeing it clearly and knowing, oh, this is what it is. This is what's going on. And so when energy is strong and balanced, it leads to the awakening factor of joy. The Pali word is piti, and some pronunciations, biti. And it's sometimes translated as rapture, sometimes as bliss, and sometimes as joy. Joy has a certain energetic quality to it. You know, it arises out of association with joy, with energy. And so the Buddha goes on to say, if I think and ponder upon this wholesome thought, even for a night, even for a day, even for a night and day, I see nothing to fear from it, from thinking a wholesome thought. But with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body. When the body is tired, the mind becomes disturbed. And when the mind is disturbed, it is far from concentration. So I steadied my mind internally, quieted it, brought it to singleness, and concentrated it. So he let go of thinking, even though he was thinking a wholesome thought, and simply quieted the mind. And this is the next awakening factor, tranquility. A calming of the mind, a calming of the body. There doesn't have to be a conscious decision to let go of the joy. As we see things more clearly, as we're able to be more present with the way that they are, the mind and the body just begin settling down, becoming more calm, more tranquil. And tranquility is a condition then for the arising of concentration. You may have noticed this yourselves, that as the breath gets calmer, the body gets calmer, the mind begins to get calmer, and then concentration begins to get stronger. Concentration leads to the awakening factor of equanimity, a balanced way of relating to and experiencing what comes into the mind and heart in any particular moment. When these awakening factors are strong, wisdom develops and insights arise. And when the factors are fully developed, the most important insight arises, truly seeing things the way they are, seeing in our own experience the truth of the Four Noble Truths. And so then, awakening can occur, some degree of liberation from the unwholesome states that keep us caught in unsatisfactoriness can occur. It all begins, moment by moment, with wise, careful attention, noticing when the unwholesome is present and abandoning it, noticing when the wholesome is present and supporting it. So, thank you for your attention.